The Monologue.
A lot of people are out of a job here in Washington State, and it's all going to impact you. In some ways that you don't realize, in others that you soon will realize. There are some of the obvious things, for example. Despite a governor who pretended there was no problem with the ferry system, we learned officially that they ended up firing 132. Well, three of them retired with reasons unknown. We know the reason. And then eight of them retired in lieu of vaccination, so they were forced out. 132. And yet we were told that that wasn't happening, that this series of delays that we saw and the random cancellation of routes, that, oh, it was, you know, we have an old bunch of boats, of ferries. They're, you know, they're the mechanical issues here and there. You know, it's not that big of a deal. When you look at WashDOT as a whole, 402 employees left. 402 left. Now, that actually impacts the work that gets done on our roads, our freeways. Headquarters lost 32 total. The people who are in charge of getting these projects underway. This hits you. This hurts you. When you look specifically at what they did, engineers in the engineering department, 65 total are out. So when things break down and you need an engineer on site, you have 65 fewer people to deal with. Maintenance, just to do some basic fixes, 175 are out. 175. And like all other agencies, they overwhelmingly said, no, we're not going to give you a religious accommodation. 572 people put in a religious accommodation request. Of the 572, 455 were approved. How many were accommodated? Only 51. Only 51. We see this over and over and over again. This impacts you directly. When we look at what's going on in fire departments, especially in Seattle, here in Seattle where it's the big one, they want us to believe that they only lost, you know, a handful here or there. That number is not true, and they're playing some of the same word games, semantic games, as SPD. And there was a moment where Brandi Crews yesterday interviewed Chief Harold Scoggins, and she just crushed him by asking just some basic questions.
I don't believe our firefighters have been out putting the public at risk because we've done an amazing job.
So just real quickly, we've not been putting them out at risk. What is he talking about? He's talking about going out up until recently, unvaccinated, or at least unwilling to turn in their paperwork. What were they wearing on their face? PPE. They were doing the job safely for the last 18 months, he just said.
Our testing sites, our vaccination sites, running 911 calls. I mean, in September, we ran 7,900 calls. 4,200 were BLS related. Another 1,100 were ALS related. Fire alarms, fires, into encampments, into buildings. Our goal is not to put the public at risk. Throughout the entire pandemic, we have had one transmission on a call from a patient to a firefighter. But other than that, we haven't.
That's kind of an interesting detail, isn't it? Because we're told that the work that they do is dangerous, that if they don't get vaccinated, they're going to go out into the community and they're going to give COVID to a member of the public who might not be vaccinated in an area that has 80% vaccination rate. That's why it's so important for them to get vaccinated. But he just said also, there was only one transmission, and it wasn't from a member of the fire department. And by the way, they were doing it safely. So what exactly has changed in the 18 months?
Well, the rules change tomorrow. Oh. And, you know, we're trying to come into compliance with the mayor's directive and the governor's proclamation. So our goal is not to put the community at risk. Our goal is also not to put each other at risk.
They weren't at risk before. They're not at risk now.
The interview.
Wasn't a good day yesterday for those of us who rightly think it's government overreach to mandate that government workers or workers in any industry should be forced as a condition of employment to get a vaccine. It's not an anti-vax position. It's actually a pro-medical freedom position. Joining me on the line is attorney Nathan Arnold. Welcome to the show, Nathan. Obviously, yesterday was not a result that you had hoped for.
No, it wasn't the result that we hoped for. It was a preliminary hearing. It's difficult to reach those standards, and we understand that. Candidly, I think we did. I do have great respect for our judges. These are very difficult issues and a mountain of evidence that's very difficult to go through on such a short timeline. So, unfortunately, we didn't get the result we wanted, and it's unfortunate for my clients, and it's also unfortunate for anyone that wants an ambulance or a fire truck to show up on time.
Yeah, I mean, we got some of the word today on what those numbers actually mean when it comes to the Washington State Troopers. They lost 127, which is a slightly misleading number. It's actually higher than that when you account for all of the folks who have retired early just to get out of this. Seattle Fire is losing dozens and dozens. They're pretending that that's not the case. Seattle Police Department also losing a whole bunch of folks. So where do things stand at this point? It seems like the argument that you're making is irrelevant in the sense of the emergency clause or the emergency powers that are given to the governor.
Well, I'll first point out that the data coming out of the city of Seattle is a knowing misrepresentation.
Yeah, they know it. They're lying about the numbers. I've got the story up at KTTH.com. They are flatly lying about the numbers.
Okay, well, as long as we got that clear first. So, you know, for the lawsuit, we're going to continue in the normal course that we always would in what is at base, a wrongful termination case with a multitude of constitutional elements. That is the constitutionality of a governor who appears that he is going to indefinitely extend his emergency powers and enter into, you know, enter unprecedented proclamations and orders. And then also, you know, after we get past that issue, it's, you know, does the Constitution of the state of Washington matter anymore? Article 1, Section 11 gives us absolute right to our religious conscience. That apparently is not the case in this context at this stage. Ultimately, however, and again, yesterday's ruling was not a ruling on the merits.
Correct.
It is a ruling on whether or not we'll have a preliminary injunction. And that's important for people to remember. Ultimately, I think we will prevail. I do think the Washington state and the federal constitution still matter. And so that's one group of my clients. You know, the other group of my clients are those with a medical issue, and that is their own doctors told them, don't do this thing. People's own physicians should supersede a general order from the government. And it's especially true where, you know, what the law requires in most contexts, and if it wasn't for the politics of this thing, this would be a lay down employment case.
It would, but you know, Nathan,
requires...
but they're circumventing all this, right? I mean, their trick, they think that this is the way to get out of any sort of legal consequences. We're going to grant you your religious or medical exemption. However, we are going to deny you accommodations. They're doing that for the vast majority of the people who are asking.
Well, indeed, and they have conceded, therefore, the sincerity of people's religious and medical concerns. So they concede that they're sincere, they concede that they're legitimate, but they're saying people just can't be accommodated. And we know that's factually inaccurate. The entire state of Oregon has accommodated all of their state troopers. We have the city of Spokane, which refuses to accommodate my clients, even though they've offered to pay for masking and testing, which is more than what the neighboring fire departments are doing. The city of Spokane is surrounded by fire departments with which it has mutual aid agreements who are accommodating their people. That means that starting today, and the 911 calls are not going to change in volume. The 911 calls are just going to be answered by unvaccinated firefighters from Spokane Valley instead of the city of Spokane. So it doesn't even accomplish the purpose that the government claims that they're trying to accomplish.
They know that. This is very clearly a strategy of vaccinate everyone at all costs, at any cost. They think that's the right move, but the question then becomes, once everyone gets vaccinated under their will, then what? What will they ask for after that? And I think we're going towards a very scary place. Thankfully, you're there trying to get in the way, and we wish you luck, Nathan, as you move forward this case, and hopefully the next time we'll have some better news to report. Nathan Arnold, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now this.
The monologue.
There is a hotly contested race in Virginia for governor. You've got Youngkin, the Republican, against McAuliffe, the Democrat. McAuliffe, of course, used to be in power there, left, and is now coming back. And the polls seem to indicate that things are pretty close. McAuliffe has a slight edge over Youngkin, I think 2 to 3 points, around that. And so, you know, Republicans are looking at the state and saying, ooh, this might actually be winnable. And, you know, Virginia, the demographics have changed dramatically, in large part to the Democrats who work in D.C. but live in Virginia. And there was a moment in the campaign, an interview that was done today on MSNBC, where, you know, you kind of get the sense that McAuliffe is a little desperate. He's a little desperate. He's leaning into this, if you don't elect me, if a Republican gets in office, the worst stuff in the world is going to happen. He's leaning into the fear-mongering in a way that I found a little bit amusing.
I'm for raising the minimum wage to $15. I'm for paid family medical leave. I'm for paid sick leave. Glenn Youngkin is against every one of those. He wants to ban abortions. He got caught on tape saying he will go on offense to ban abortion and defund Planned Parenthood. And Kate, now after what we've seen in Texas with the Trump Supreme Court, if Glenn Youngkin is elected governor, abortions will cease here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Women's right to choose will be gone. That's what I talk about every single day.
Another big issue. You should have stopped him right there and said, governors can't actually ban abortion. I mean, you know that, right? Governors can't actually just ban abortions. If that were the case, there would be lots of states where abortion was banned. They have a state legislature. They would, in theory, have to come up with a law that I guess is similar to the one in Texas and then hope that the courts in that district give it the approval, and then it ultimately will get to the Supreme Court. At the end of the day, it's not the governor who makes that kind of decision, but when you lean into that kind of stuff, when you lean into that kind of talking point, you do it out of a place of desperation. You're trying to get the base a little bit more activated. And I think he sees the base being activated on the issue of education. That's what I think Terry McAuliffe sees. He sees a lot of people who looked at CRT when we pretended it wasn't an actual thing. Then they realized, oh, yes, it is a real thing, and you can't tell us otherwise. Now I'm going to show up to a bunch of meetings in Loudoun County, and we're going to start making a ruckus to the point where one of the board members ended up stepping down, although, of course, that had to do with a cover-up of a sex abuse scandal at the school. But he's leaning into this because he is nervous, and it's good. I want him to be nervous, and I have no idea if he's going to win or lose. Virginia is not an easy state for a Republican to win anymore. But the fact that they're going on this kind of offense means that there are a lot more folks on the right who finally have decided to step up and take on these issues and get more active, show up to meetings, which I know a lot of people can't always do because some meetings are in the middle of the day. Sometimes, hey, you've got a life, a job, you've got kids to take care of, you've got a husband or a wife that you're there supporting as well. It's not always easy to drop what you're doing and show up to a meeting on a Tuesday at 11 a.m. That's what a lot of the professional Democrat activists are able to do. That's what they do for a living. But more and more people who are on our side politically are stepping up and getting more involved. And when you get more involved, you end up winning elections. It doesn't always happen overnight. It can take years and years and years. But the momentum should be on our side. What are you doing to keep it there?
The interview.
There are only a few people standing in the way of the Bothell City Council being turned over to some pretty fringe socialists slash progressives. One candidate is running to keep that from becoming a reality. Becca Nistrian is running for Bothell City Council, and she joins me now. Becca, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me, Jason.
People might not be following the sort of inner workings of Bothell City Council, but this race is especially important. The makeup can completely change, could it not?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a majority turnover. There's 4 seats open out of 7. this year. So it's vital that we get the right people into city council in November.
And there's a group of folks who are pretty far to the left, and that's me being kind. These are Seattle-style progressives and socialists who are running. You're trying to stand in the way. Take us through how you view your role on the council.
Buffalo is a nonpartisan race, so I view my role as putting, you know, either side, either political party aside, and doing what's right for the city, supporting our first responders, our police and our fire department, really keeping a very community-oriented Buffalo that there is so far, keeping that still, you know, being there for small businesses, just really trying to make the livelihood of Buffalo as vibrant and as safe as it possibly can be.
What does that mean for businesses? Because you in particular, you've got a background as a business owner. What does that mean?
So I've had my coffee stand for 4.5 years. And like an example, you know, a little bit over a year ago, I was burglarized, you know, and the police came and they responded immediately. I can't imagine not having the police at my disposal to be able to call and being like, hey, you know, I've been burglarized or I'm being robbed and them coming to my rescue. So as a small business owner, having that reassurance is super vital and important. You need to have public safety on your side when you do run a business, especially with the times that we're in right now and people are just kind of taking whatever they want without working for it, really. So I think that it's vital to have them in your back pocket in a very positive, supportive way.
And, you know, just policing in general is such a big issue, public safety, as a result of some of the other people who are running for the council in this group of sort of Seattle-style progressives. They want to defund the police. What does a properly funded Bothell Police Department look like to you?
Well, I'm all about checks and balances, accountability for everyone involved. Right now, currently, the Bothell Police Department does not have dash cams or webcams or body cams. And I do want to make sure that they have those. It protects everybody involved. It protects them as much as it protects the public. And also making sure that training is not the smallest part of their budget, because that's typically how it is in a police department. They need training. They need to be able to go to the latest trainings without it being the first thing that's cut when there is a budget cut. We need to support them because their support and them loving their job really really shows in how they do their job, and it shows in the community atmosphere.
Absolutely. And I think that that's such a big part of it. You know, we always talk about the Seattle influence and how bad policies start to spread. And again, to your point, you don't have to be a partisan. You don't have to be a Democrat or Republican to acknowledge that some of these policies that have been adopted just have flatly not worked. And this idea that it's all of a sudden going to hit Bothell is terrifying.
Oh, that's literally why I ran for council. I'm terrified. I mean, I have a very full plate. And so running for council is another responsibility. But I do feel it is good people have to run. And Bothell has done so much for me. It's supported me for 4.5 years. It allows me to be a mom first. And so I feel running for council is the highest level of giving back to my community that I can do. But we need good people that are, you know, really just trying to do what's best for the community to run. That's pretty much why I ran, because I saw this atmosphere in Seattle, this very negative, you know, in a lot of ways, hateful atmosphere. Yeah. And I said, you know, I want to unite Bothell. I want to make sure that it's united, that it's welcome for all people. I don't care who you are. I want you to feel welcome and safe in Bothell. So that's why I'm running.
I wish you the best of luck. I know a lot of people out there do as well. If you live in Bothell, make sure that you're voting for Becca Nystrian. But of course, if you don't live in Bothell, you know people who do. Make sure they're aware of this campaign. If you want to learn more about the ways you can help raise awareness and maybe donate, is BeccaForBothell.com, BECAFORBothell.com, BeccaForBothell.com. Becca Nystrian, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jason. Have a great day.
You as well. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rantz.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rantz, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
For the last 22 years, David Dahlin has been serving as a Seattle firefighter. But now he's been shown the door, or so he thinks. He's actually not entirely sure. David has chosen not to comply with the vaccine mandate. He's got his reasons. And now he finds himself in a position where he is either fired or being forced to use his accrued vacation time or sick leave so that the city doesn't actually have to say he's been fired, at least not yet. It's a little bit confusing for him. And I imagine it's very confusing for a lot of other folks. David joins me now. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's more about how you're doing. You're in a kind of a weird position. So if you could start with why you've chosen not to comply and how the city has treated you so far.
Okay. I've chosen not to comply. I've had COVID. Brought it home to my family like any generous father would do. And gave all my stuff to the family. Sorry, a little bit of humor there. But survived it well. I submitted a religious exemption, a request for a religious exemption. It was granted. The verbiage that I used, I had to be very careful to honestly reflect my views,
mm-hmm.
And describe them properly because I wasn't going to lie on that. I did so. It was accepted. I got a letter the email that says, we've received your request. And then a few days later, I got one that says, it's been granted. And then a little while later, I got one that says, we'll be in touch with, we're reviewing your case and we'll be in touch with you about whether or not we can accommodate you. So, okay, fine. And we had several exchanges back and forth. I believe I was respectful in all of my exchanges back and forth. I felt that the person exchanging with me was also very, very respectful. The people in the HR department are in a terrible bind. But for me, COVID's real. I'm not.
Well, clearly you had it.
It's a real thing. And in my personal couple of circles of people, you got your really inner circle, which is your immediate family. And then maybe, another ring out as that grows out and, two or three rings out there, you get to, the people that might be quote Facebook friends and not really friends, they're just people that,
mm-hmm.
Well, in the first couple of circles of my life, I have more people that have been negatively impacted by whichever vaccine plan they chose, with significant negative impacts. Then I have people that have been significantly negatively impacted for a long period of time from the COVID virus. Is it real? Yeah, it is. So is the flu virus. I have no judgment, no ill will towards anybody that chose to get the vaccine. I'm really puzzled as to why honest, open, data-driven conversations, discussions are being suppressed. That's a red flag. When you can't have a professional, respectful conversation about, hey, this is what we're seeing,
mm-hmm.
then that's a red flag about, wait a minute, this is starting to smell like an agenda, right? And I haven't, the more things that happen in life and in our community, the more it's looking, if it looks like a duck, it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, pretty soon you start to go, hey, it's a duck. And it's starting to look a lot like a duck to me.
What is the duck in that case? Because obviously there are parts to this that are 100% understandable to reasonable people that to having natural immunity at this point because the antibodies are in your system from actually having recovered from COVID, and no one wants to no one wants to acknowledge that exists. They pretend it doesn't. On the other hand, you do have some of the very crazy conspiracy theories that are clearly not based in fact either. So when you consider all of this, where's your mind going?
Well, my mind is going, why have the powers that be, whether it's our elected officials or our people that have been appointed by the elected officials in bureaucratic environments, why are they not at least recognizing that, hey, natural immunities do something, or that they count for something. Now, here's the other thing. I'm not a virologist. I'm not an immunologist. But I'm gonna ask you a question, and I'm going to ask you to use some common sense and based on just being an educated person about where your mind goes. In so many other areas of Western medicine, if somebody gets, let's say somebody has the horrible affliction of cold sores, very commonly their doctor will advise them to have a filled prescription bottle of whatever particular antiviral medication works best for them sitting on the shelf, so that the first sign of the tingle or whatever that someone gets when the cold sore happens, they don't have to wait for 2 days to get an appointment to see their doctor and then another half a day to get that prescription filled. They go, wait a minute, this is a known antiviral. This is something that we've already gone through the scientific process of, hey, you know, just about everything we take has some potential side effects. So you got to figure out what's going to work for you and what doesn't. But what Western medicine has done, and I'll give them a pass for the first 30, 60, maybe even 90 days of this whole COVID adventure. What they said is wait till your lips turn blue before you come to the hospital because they don't want to risk infecting people. Well, wait a minute. They send people like us into known COVID positive environments with an N95 and have had very, very great success with an N95 or higher mask. So what we should be doing, my opinion, is going, wait a minute. You start to get COVID symptoms. We'll throw an N95 out you at the door. Get to your nearest clinic. Walk in, wear your N95 mask. The person attending you wears an N95 mask. You draw the blood. You get started on antivirals right away. A list of known antivirals. Dr. Robert Malone has done a wonderful job of articulating the benefits of repurposed drugs. At first, I didn't understand what he was talking about. But once I started to dive a little bit deeper, and basically what he's referring to is medications, drugs that the FDA has already vetted over sometimes decades, going, hey, we know this is, yeah, everything's got potential side
effects. And Dr. Malone, by the way, just for folks, he's the one who invented mRNA. But you're basically saying that there are lots of ways to treat this. But I want to turn a little bit back to the main point, which is you now find yourself out of a job, but you're a little bit confused as to exactly what the situation is right now. So what exactly has Seattle Fire told you?
My understanding, I haven't even actually gotten an email that says I'm not supposed to report to duty yet. So I'm guessing so. I'm actually scheduled for a debit day tomorrow, so I need to make a phone call or you know, just probably send an email so I've got something in writing so I don't get in trouble for not showing up, just in case I'm supposed to show up. My city email still works, so I can exchange emails and communication, formal correspondence that way. I haven't tried my card key because I've been away. I would imagine my card key has been turned off. So
isn't it weird to you that they haven't communicated this?
I haven't received them.
Have you reached out to them to try to get some sort of, because it is a weird limbo for them to put you in.
Correct. It is. And my plan is to reach out to them today, a little bit later on, and see what they have to say.
Well, we'll see what ends up happening. I hope you'll give us an update as to where things go, because it's certainly not looking very good. We wish you the best of luck, David. You're in a tough spot. At the end of the day, I think this should be left up to the individual. I think the vaccine makes sense in the vast majority of cases. In some cases, it clearly does not. But to your point, you're not allowed to actually say
that. Right.
Yeah, people should have that right. It shouldn't be a condition of employment.
You have that right.
It's absolutely ludicrous. You're in a tough spot. Yeah. I feel for you, David. I do appreciate you stopping by and sharing your story. I hope you'll give us the update when you get it.
Okay. Have a good day.
You as well. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Now this.
The Jason Rand Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
It's not just Seattle that's dealing with the nightmarish outcome of a vaccination policy against law enforcement. We've been talking about it not just this hour, but across the show. You have 100... and nine SPD staffers, 99 of them being officers, uniformed officers being pulled from patrol, six being officially fired, the rest are just on extended leave. And obviously, you know, you can call it firing, you can call it putting them on extended leave. At the end of the day, they're not patrolling the streets. And when they're not patrolling the streets, it means more of us are in danger in a city like Seattle, where crime is going through the roof, violent crime in particular, and we're not seeing any consequences for the criminals who actually misbehave. But in Chicago, things are particularly bad. Particularly bad. It's one of the only times you're going to say, man, maybe Seattle isn't so bad. Of course, understand the context of that. It is, in fact, really, really bad. You've got a lot of officers there, just like you have here, who've spoken out against the vaccine. And they've been saying, this goes too far. This is government overreach. And as of today, 19 Chicago cops ended up getting stripped of their powers. Why? They didn't want to disclose their vaccination status to the city. Now, in this case, most of the officers were assigned to the headquarters. This, according to the union president out there, John Catanzara. He's the one who represents the rank and file officers. And just like here in Seattle, they had their deadline. Their deadline was October 15th, so just a few days before ours, where they had to either, they had to disclose their vaccination status. Beyond that, then they would have the option of taking tests so that they can be able to work. Now, at the time or before this, leading into this deadline, Catanzara had told everyone, hold the line, do not comply. You don't have to. A judge then stripped him of his right to speak publicly about the city mandate. Unbelievable. Now, yesterday, there were actually 40 officers who were initially fired, but a number of them ended up giving in and complied with the vaccine mandate. So they had their powers immediately restored. The 19 officers who chose not to give in not only had their powers stripped from them, but they were placed on a no-pay status, and they were ordered to turn in their badge, their shield, and their police ID. On top of that, a complaint was lodged against each of the non-compliant officers. Now, how long it takes to deal with those, don't know. But you only had 64% of the staff reporting their vaccine status. So this initial 40, was that the test run to see how many you can get to turn over the data? Because 64% compliance means there's a lot of folks who haven't delivered their information. And the majority of the people, by the way, are vaccinated. But a lot of folks just don't think that they should have to turn over this kind of private data to their employer, be it a government or not. Rick Nigro is an officer with Chicago PD. He spoke to NBC News.
You are willing to get fired for this?
Yes, I am. I hope I don't, obviously. But, you know, I really believe I'm doing the right thing.
There's too much government control in that. You're going to tell me what I'm going to put in my body. That's my choice. And the result is you're going to terminate me?
His point is reasonable. It is. We can pretend it's not. We can pretend it's not, but it is. And at the end of the day, we get these policies because that's who's in power. The people making these policies, they're in power. They get to determine where it is the policies go, and we don't really have a say unless, wait for it, you do a little bit more to get the right people elected. I've seen some folks attack the Republican Party. They're not doing enough. What would you like them to do if you're not going to give them the power to do anything? We played you the audio of Jim Walsh being locked out of the Capitol. What power do you think he has right now? What power does State Representative Jim Walsh, Republican from Aberdeen, have when the people in charge are locking him out of the Capitol due to his vaccine status? Unless you deliver a majority to the Republicans, nothing's going to change. Well, they're the establishment. can't back the establishment, okay, well, then you're going to lose every single election. Well, elections are stolen. Oh, yeah? Well, how have we won some of them? They're just choosing sometimes to give us a win instead of just total domination. When we had control of the Senate and the Democrats the House, they just decided, oh, let's just see how it would work this time around if we gave them some power. That's not how it works. It's not how it works. People are leaning too much into conspiracy. Others are leaning way too much into placing the blame where it does not belong. John Braun and JT Wilcox, our leadership, they don't know what they're doing. If I see another tweet like that, I'm going to go nuts. No one explains what you would have them do. None whatsoever. No explanations. Instead, you just complain and you blame them. And by the way, in doing so, you make it that much easier for Democrats to take advantage of the infighting. All the times not to have infighting, probably be around now. Probably be around the time where we're starting to lose a lot of our freedoms, just like medical choice, bodily autonomy. And to be clear, in Washington State, the folks are on the side of the Inslees right now because we're not doing a good enough job in pushing back with facts. Instead, too many people are pushing in to the conspiracies. And with that,
the last rant.
I give you my last rant. You want to win arguments? If you want to win this issue, stop it with this nonsense conspiracy theories. Got to pull back. I'm still seeing just abject nonsense as it relates to the vaccine. I am someone who is pro-vaccine. I'm someone who is vaccinated. But I'm also someone who doesn't believe it should be forced on people. That seems like a reasonable position. But if I come to that argument saying, well, the reason why it shouldn't be forced on people is because anyone who takes it in 4 years, they're going to be dead from it. I would not be listened to. Of course, I don't actually hold that position because it's a crazy one. But I'm still seeing stuff like that from some of you guys who listen, who write in. Not all of you, probably not even the majority of you. But there's a small group of folks who do push that stuff, and that hurts the cause. And if you are one of those people, stop going down the rabbit hole of going to random blogs you've never heard of to pull your medical information, your data that you think is a reality. Stop it. You are doing a tremendous disservice to the cause, which should be to fight for our freedoms. How about this? You believe that stuff? Fine. Keep it to yourself. You hurt. Every single time you speak up with that crap, you end up hurting the cause. And if that makes you upset, so be it. I would rather have you upset than us lose our medical autonomy. And that's the last rants.